You are listening to The Pulse, Rod Murray's e-learning tech podcast, number 151.
This is Rod Murray. Welcome back to my podcast. Well, that was a teaser from a new source for PodSafe Music. You could say that I composed it, but I use something called JukeDeck, which I find very interesting. It's a machine learning technology that's been applied to composing and adapting professional quality music. So you can go there, jukedeck.com, and play around and create your own music. So it's a little teaser. I'll be playing the full song called Blue Purpose at the end of my podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Inside Higher Ed, the online source for news, opinion, and jobs for all of higher education. I also invite you to follow me on Twitter. My handle is RodsPods. As always, I post links to all of the things we talk about on my show notes at www.rodspulsepodcast.com. Well, today I'm very pleased to share with you an interview I had with Michael Eisenman. He's the founder of Learn by Hand. He has a master's in chemical engineering, and he worked for about 30 years at DuPont Research and Development. But he's always been very interested in education, and he learned how to code himself. Now, this is a man that I would say is in my age range. So you can teach, let's say, older dogs to learn something new, and I include myself in that. But he has a passion for education, and especially teaching algebra. So after volunteering teaching underprivileged students how to learn algebra, especially procedural fluency, he decided to learn how to code himself and to build an app. I was very fortunate to meet him at a recent PADLA meeting. That's our Pennsylvania Distance Learning Association. So I was intrigued about his story, and he was good enough to stop by. And so I interviewed him about his background, his passion for teaching, why he learned to code, how he learned to code, how he built his app, and what is procedural fluency after all? So I learned a lot. We also learned about his mission, which is equity in mathematics. I'd also like to point out that Michael is giving a free trial subscription for Algebra by Hand to listeners of this podcast. You'll see the link on my show notes. So without further ado, here's my interview with Michael Eisenman. Mike, thank you so much for stopping by and talking to me about your new company and your new app. Before we get into the details about your app, I thought it'd be very interesting to know how you evolved, how you decided to get into this business, and tell us first a little bit about yourself.
Well, sure. Thanks very much, Rod, for having me, and looking forward to this discussion today. So I am a chemical engineer, of all things. I went to undergraduate school at Cornell, and I got a master's in chemical engineering from the University of Wisconsin, and went straight to work for DuPont, and worked for DuPont for nearly 30 years as a chemical engineer, and mostly in research all that time. Great experience. And the last roughly 20 of those years, even a little more, I spent developing inks for inkjet printers, which was a very fascinating area. But the market for inkjet right now has been declining because, well, mostly I'd say because of cell phones. So I'd say that I lost my job with DuPont for all the right reasons. I was so happy that that was the reason, that because technology was progressing and we were becoming more environmentally conscious and not trying to spit out so much paper, that volume, that demand is going down. That's the way the world should work. And so, you know, I can't say I really understand all these coal miners who want their jobs back. I think the world has to go forward. And so what I was doing as volunteer work the last, say, 10 years is I was doing work with ABC program, which stands for A Better Chance. It's a national program. And what I've been doing the past 10 years is going in, and they call me Mr. Mike, and I go in and I've been helping them with anything that's math or science. So they know they can always get an answer from me in anything to do with math or science. Having a great time, and I ended up teaching a bunch of algebra with them, and that's how that's where my incentive to start going into coding came.
Well, that's really interesting. You know, the world is changing, and like you said, there's no more jobs for minors, and some of us may be put out of work, but it's all about training, about learning new things, and that's why I was so intrigued. I didn't tell my audience yet that I met you at one of our quarterly Padlet meetings, and we were talking about, as we do, newer technologies. I was just happened to sit down next to you and learned that you had developed your own app, and I thought that is really cool. It's, you know, coding I've been talking about for a long time. In fact, in my show notes, you'll see I have a link to 2 years ago when I talked about how everybody should learn how to code. And not that we're trying to turn people into programmers, but I think it gives you a whole new way of thinking, and the fact that you can have a skill set that is much more likely to be valued in job, you know, creation going forward. In fact, I think there was an article in Wired magazine not too long ago about coding may be the new blue collar job, you know, so maybe we should teach our minors how to code. So had you had any experience with programming, and how did you go about thinking about coding, and how did you get that started?
That's a great question. Actually, so the last time I had coded, I was a freshman in high school, in college. I did originally learn, I suppose, BASIC and PL1 up until I was a freshman in high school, in college. But when I got to DuPont, very early in my career, I actually did a coding project, a little bit of one, very tiny one. And I immediately reached the conclusion that I should not be coding in DuPont. They hired me to handle chemicals. And there were too many other people around me who were too good at coding that I was really wasting my employer's money by taking on coding. So I promised myself that I would not code while I was working for that company. And so I let the whole world pass me by for many, many years. And it was fine. I mean, because I was concentrating on chemicals. And when I had the idea for the application for teaching algebra, I decided that, okay, now it's time to learn. And the wonderful thing about the internet today is there are so many fabulous resources for being able to learn it all by yourself. You don't need to even spend, you know, tons in tuition. It's possible to learn this stuff on your own. And even something as simple, probably the first place I went to was something as simple as Khan Academy. Normally, I don't really like the stuff they have on Khan Academy, talking about it from an e-learning perspective, because I think most of it is very passive. He's droning on and on in front of a blackboard, and I think it's a tremendous underuse of the medium. However, the modules that they have for learning JavaScript, probably aimed for a seventh grader, I'd say, were perfect for me. And I was able to learn the basics of my first object-oriented programming language I had never even had. I learned, I didn't even start with C. I didn't know an object-oriented programming language. And so I started right with JavaScript, right on Khan Academy. And then, of course, there's tons of references out there, W3 schools and other things out on the internet that let you learn how to program in JavaScript. And then as my project grew, I saw I had the front end covered with learning. Of course, I also had to learn HTML and CSS, cascading style sheets. And then I had to learn about the back end and how to integrate with a server. And there's programs out there that let you learn that as well. The thing I went to was Lynda, And there was a great module in Lynda on learning Ruby on Rails. First, I started with PHP, and I could pretty much tell I was breaking into jail. All the security things that I didn't know about were going to come back to haunt me. So I needed to work within a framework, and Ruby on Rails provided me with that safety net. Ruby on Rails has a lot of things built into it that keeps me out of trouble, prevents things like SQL injection, and makes sure that your passwords are encrypted properly, and all the cross-site forgery and whatever it else is that I don't even know how it works. It's helping to protect me, even though I don't have a PhD in security.
Well, that's fascinating because I've toyed with the idea of getting back into programming. Years and years ago, I programmed in BASIC, but I just been a little busy lately, so I haven't had the time to do that. But I had also come to the conclusion that JavaScript was the place to start, and I started similar to you. I started down that path, but didn't get too far, and I really didn't. And I still don't understand exactly what you have to do in the back end to support that sort of thing. So I'm glad you're giving me some good tips here and how to do that. So you didn't have to spend much to learn the technology. How did you finally end up picking obviously you probably don't have a server in your basement, I'm guessing. So you're hosting this in the cloud somewhere. Can you tell us a little bit about how you came to that decision and where you're hosting your software?
Sure. So there are a lot of good web hosting companies out there right now. I'm happy to be using DigitalOcean, is what I'm using. But it costs very little to do this. And I like to say my burn rate is pretty low for what I'm doing. It's perfect. To me, I think it's a good way to start into the business. In fact, the seminar that I met you at, they had a successful entrepreneur there. And when I told her how I was going about doing my business, she was envious because she looked at it. These are the people who started Vidler. And she said, when I described to her what I was doing and how I was having my server hosted by somebody else, she said, oh, if we had it to do all over again, we would do it the way you're doing it. We will never again capitalize hardware for our project. And so it made me feel good that I was actually doing things the right way.
That's interesting. In fact, here at the university, we would very much like to get everything out of our data center and into the cloud. And that's certainly the way things are going. So getting back to your app then, we understand by the name that it's used to teach algebra to students. And how do you monetize this?
Let's cover the mission first, because that dictates how it gets monetized. The purpose of this software, and I'll describe probably a little later, more specifically, the purpose of the software allows teachers to become more effective at teaching algebra, specifically procedural fluency in algebra. And it teaches something that I call advanced procedural fluency for algebra. That's the main focus. Now, the second stipulation is I'd like to make it free to students. So I like the idea of promoting, more than like the idea, of promoting equity in mathematics. Equity in just about anything would be great, wouldn't it? Well, equity in mathematics is something I feel very strongly about. So I make this free to students. I think a lot of this comes from, I actually had an experience when I was in high school. And I was sitting in my high school class, I'm about 17 years old, and who should walk into my classroom but Dr. Benjamin Spock. Dr. Benjamin Spock, the famous pediatrician, the person that we all raised our children with. And after the class, we got to ask him questions. And it was kind of an advanced math class. So the question I asked Dr. Spock was, why are there so few girls in this math class? Now, this is like 1979. I'm like 17 years old. I'm thinking this is a doctor. He's going to say genetics and chemistry and all this stuff. And he doesn't hesitate a second. He looks right at me and he says, oh, I think it all goes back to kindergarten, don't you? Well, that's not the answer I expected to get. And since then, I realized the man's right. In other words, he's saying it's not the chemistry. It's not how our brains are pre-wired. It's what we do, how we treat people without even knowing that we're doing it. Things that are very subtle. And if it's that way about gender, it's that way about race too. And just about everything, every other bias that you might have. He opened my eyes. What a gift from a, you know, giant like that. And so this part of, you know, my experiences is part of why I want to try and do this. So now I have to get back to your question. How do I monetize this if I'm not charging students? Well, the software, what it lets teach, one of the things it lets teachers do is create their own worksheets. And the teacher can assign them to the class. The students can do it. The server corrects it and gives a full grade report back to the teacher. That saves the teacher time. I think teacher would be willing to pay for that. No correcting to be done and very rich information back. And I'll describe a little bit later probably how what kind of information the teacher gets back. So for that, if a teacher wants to assign, make a single assignment to a class, I'm charging them $4. If they want to have an annual subscription that allows them to make unlimited assignments for a year, that's $75. And so that's one way that I have to monetize it. The other way that I could, that I can monetize it is I could partner with tutoring networks. I can partner with virtual schools, people who specialize in distance learning, and I could run an integration. So they already have some capability in software. I can integrate what I have with them. It's a wonderful distance learning tool. And so I can charge for the integrate for that kind of integration.
That's really interesting business plan. I think that makes a lot of sense. And we've been thinking around here a lot about the future of education, the future of what we do here at the university, but just in general. And you hear more and more about machine learning and artificial intelligence. And one of the first applications you hear about is intelligent tutors. And it strikes me that that's what your software is. It's an intelligent tutor. You know, the upside is probably tremendous. I wish you a lot of success. How about working with the schools themselves? Have any schools asked about a subscription for the whole, you know, for a grade or for a whole school?
Well, of course, right now it's very early on. I am actually running classes right now myself in the College Access Center. This is a place in Chester, Pennsylvania. These are underserved students. And I'm finding a tremendous amount of talent in Chester. It's really beautiful to see. And so I am running some classes there. I would like to offer to your listeners that if they would like to try out the software, that they can go to the link on your website, and they'll get a 4-month free subscription to see if it's something that they can use. It's very unique, the software. What it does, this is really the first in the world that does what this software does. It's the first application on the web that allows drag and drop solving of algebra problems. And this is how it enhances procedural fluency. So a student, when they first learn algebra, let's say they had an equation, A plus B equals C, and they were asked to solve for A. Well, what they're taught to do in school, and this is the correct way to teach it, is to subtract B from both sides of the equation. And so they write a little minus B on one left side and write a little minus B, and probably what most of you learned when you were learning algebra. Well, anybody who's now fluent in mathematics doesn't solve the problem that way. They don't picture that way. In their mind, they grab that B and they lift it up and move it to the other side of the equal sign. And when they do, that B changes sign. Well, imagine you could do that. Imagine you had the equation right there in front of you and you could touch the terms and factors and drag them across the equal sign and solve equations that way. That's what this software allows you to do. It gives them that visualization. That's advanced procedural fluency. And it's actually not taught in the United States. Everybody in the U.S. invents it on their own. It's so useful, people realize that they need to reduce their cognitive load when they're solving algebra problems, because the subtracting and adding and dividing both sides is too cognitively taxing. So they invent this on their own. Why make the students invent it on their own? Show it to them. Okay? And you'll advance students more quickly. And in some cases, the students who never come up with advanced fluency on their own, if you show it to them, they'll become better mathematicians and they'll be more prepared for things like calculus. You should see the look of horror on a calculus teacher's face when a student writes -3 on both sides of the equation before moving to the next step. That calculus teacher is thinking to themselves, you're in calculus and you're still solving things that way? They know that they should possess advanced fluency.
Sitting next to you at the Padlet meeting, and you brought out your phone and you showed me in less than a couple of minutes how the app worked. Like this light bulb went off and I thought, wow, this is really powerful. Right away, you know what it's used for and you know how useful it can be. So I really applaud you for that. I always like to identify interesting new applications of education. So, you know, and I didn't know what procedural fluency was, and you just explained it. Where do you see your company going? Do you foresee this technology, this kind of technology, being used in other kinds of math and so on?
Actually, I see this type of interface catching on. So I see other people taking a look at this. I'm guessing other people are going to try to replicate what I've had. I consider that flattery, and I think it's all for the better. So what I envision is I'd like to actually influence education in the U.S. Right now, in Russia, in China, in Malaysia, in Japan, in India, they actually teach advanced fluency. They teach it, okay? We don't even teach it here in the U.S. So I would love to see being able to, but just with coming out with this interface, I may have a chance to influence the way we teach algebra in the U.S. So I think we should continue to teach by applying equivalent arithmetic operations on both sides of an equation. That is the right way to teach it because it's better connected to fundamentals. However, once the student has mastered those things, put them on a global competitive basis with the rest of the other students in the world and give them the gift of advanced procedural fluency. So I would very much love to see this app as being useful to a number of schools, a number of organizations, and for it to become a standard for helping students become better mathematicians.
I wish you luck in that. I'm hoping that our new head of the Department of Education will allow you to do something like that. You might have to wait for the next administration to come in, I'm afraid, but that's for another time. So, Mike, thank you again so much. Is there any parting words you have for us?
Well, thanks, Rod. Yeah, I think, you know, I love to learn. And so this has been a fabulous journey. And every chance I get, I've been learning not just the coding aspect, but also the business aspect. I've spent the last 30 years locked in a laboratory. And once in a while, they let me out and talk to customers and talk to the plant and operations and that type of thing. But now's a chance to get to learn the marketing side and learn selling and even just doing a podcast. It's a wonderful experience for me. I learn a lot. I learn just even from listening to your podcast. And so all of these things are great experiences. And, you know, I think the internet is helping to enable all this massive learning and continual improvement of individuals. So it's a great time to be a learner.
Hear, hear. Thanks again. So I hope you found the interview interesting. I know he was an inspiration to me. So maybe I'll pick up JavaScript and Ruby on Rails and start programming again after all these years. So stay tuned for the full song. It's a short song called Blue Purpose. And until next time, have a great week.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to give Rod feedback. You can leave comments on his blog or send email to rod@rodspulsepodcast.com. The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Murray, and does not represent the official viewpoint of the University of the Sciences or any other institution or company.